Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, all you dog-loving peeps out there. I hope everyone is doing very well. Really quick, guys, we just came out with some brand new merch, and I want to give some of it away to you guys here on the podcast exclusively. Nowhere else we're doing this. What you guys need to do if you haven't yet is leave a review in the review page below. Whatever you're listening to this on the podcast, screenshot it, share it with me on Instagram, and tag me. I'm going to pick five people. I'm going to be giving away five different No Bad Dog merch stuff. As soon as this is released, the first five people that do it is going to get some free stuff shipped out to you. So you guys can do that to win some free stuff. But I want to roll with the episode, guys. In this episode, this is a great podcast because I touch on some things, and I kind of said this last session, but this is true to this episode too. I touch on some things I haven't touched on before, and I say and I explain things in a way I haven't done before, and I really like this episode because I'm really able to break through with this dog owner. And the reason why I'm saying these things is because the dog owner found such empowerment and such motivation and inspiration to move forward and be successful with her dog. And so this episode is with a dog owner, just like you guys listening at home, working on a lot of different stuff. So there's many different things going on. There's leash stuff, there's reaction, there's frustration. This is a younger dog, and so obviously she has a long road ahead. So this is a great episode for anybody out there dealing with anything. And if you're a dog trainer, of course, listening through the process is always fun and entertaining. I appreciate you guys so much. This podcast is growing, and it's very special to be able to connect with you guys on this level. So I appreciate you guys. And I also appreciate my friends over at dogcha.com. As you guys know, e-collars are one of my biggest tools in my success in working with my off-leash dogs, as well as some of my behavior modification. And Dogcha is the only brand that I use on my videos, talk about in this podcast. And most important thing, guys, is Dogcha is actually giving you listeners some monies off your entire purchase at dogcha.com. If you guys spend $200 or more, you can get 10% off your entire purchase using the discount code NBD10 at checkout. That stands for No Bad Dogs 10 for you listeners on the podcast. So don't tell me I ain't never did nothing for you guys. Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. And I also want to give a shout out, huge shout out to my new partnership and my new friends over at Herm Springer. As you guys know, Herm Springer is the best manufacturer for dog training collars other than remote collars. So they do prong collars, they do neck tech collars, they do martingale collars, they do all really pretty high end imported from Germany stuff. I couldn't be more excited to work with them. Shout out to Herm Springer. Thank you guys so much. If you guys haven't yet, go ahead and follow them on Instagram. If you guys haven't followed Herm Springer on Instagram, you are missing out on a lot of great content that they're putting out, as well as some of the stuff that I'm working with them at. You can follow them at Springer_dogsports. Shout out to Herm Springer. Thank you guys so much. Let's roll into the podcast. Don't forget, for the giveaway, you guys have to do that. And the first five people, I'm giving away some free stuff. Here we go. Good morning. It's Tom. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How's it going?
Very good. Thank you.
Let's get right into it. So Bentley, I adopted him about 2 months ago. He was a rescue from Michigan. I got one of those Embark tests, and he's like 60% husky, 20% lab and retriever or whatever, and a little bit of boxer and German shepherd in there. So he's kind of a mix all over the place. He's got a lot of energy, Awesome with people, but he's had a lot of reactivity towards other dogs in general. So living in the city, right? So I don't know his story before we got him. He's 4.5 months old now. And I don't know his story, obviously, before we got him, like what his experience was. I know he was in foster for about maybe a week, was adopted really quickly, as all the dogs are these days. So he came to me, and, you know, I live in the city, so we go for a walk, and I'm not ready for it, but he's like lunging all over the place at other dogs. At this point, we didn't have any obedience, so I was like, holy cow, how am I going to get this dog around the city, let alone like get him, you know, enough exercise to keep him from eating my house apart. So it's been a struggle. I'd say it's gotten better with basic obedience. We've tried puppy kindergarten. Initially, like a week in, I called a local trainer in Boston, and it was just someone I found on Google. And she's very like positive reinforcement based, right? So she was like, every time you see a dog, like as you're approaching, you know, give him treats, and just she called it open bar, like just keep giving him treats. Until you get past the dog. So I'm like, okay.
That's nuts.
If that's gonna work. So that's what we were doing for a while. Every time he saw another dog, like load him off with treats and make it, you know, try to make it a positive experience. So
yeah, and make him obese while you're at it. Sure.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sick.
I'm like, oh my God, how many hot dogs is this poor dog gonna eat?
Oh my
God. He's very food motivated, so like in that sense, it's a good thing. And I will say, for the time being, when I was like, holy cow, I don't know if I can keep this dog because how am I going to, you know, get his energy out at all? It worked, but I quickly realized that, like, I'm just loading him up on treats, and this is not a long-term solution. It's not, we're barely managing. We're just kind of, you know, getting through the issue, like, one dog at a time.
Yeah, it's not sustainable.
No, for sure. Definitely not. So we've, I've been working at it where I try to, you know, with basic obedience, so I've gotten him really good at leave it and at looking at me. So every time we pass a dog, I say, Bentley, look at me, and that type of thing. And that's where what's helped more. But if we, you know, if we like cross paths with the wrong dog, or we get too close too quickly, it's still a big issue. And he's really cute. So a lot of people, you know, are coming up to him, or like even where I live, a lot of people walk their dogs, not even off leash, but there's a good amount of people that are like very casual with their dogs. So if we're walking by and the sidewalks are narrow and people aren't really paying attention, they're on their phone or whatever, as much as I try to cross the street or kind of avoid the situation, it still escalates. So his reaction is, I mean, he's 4.5 months old now. I got him when he was 3. Mm-hmm. And it's like the hair on his back stands up. He points forward, like his ears go back. Like you can physically tell he's like gearing up.
Yeah, he's getting worked up.
Yeah, for sure. So he's getting worked up, and you could tell when it's coming, so I try to de-escalate as best as I can. But you could tell it's like a very adverse physical reaction. So I started Googling. I found a lot of your videos. I know like that's something that you work with a ton. Yep. And I think my biggest thing is like, I don't know the root of this problem, right? Like you speak dog, I don't speak dog. I thought I was getting like this perfect little puppy. So I was like really taken aback by his reaction. And so I don't know if it's coming from a place of fear. I don't know if it's coming from like, I think he definitely has some insecurities. He's afraid of jumping in the car. He's afraid of vacuums. Like we've worked on the vacuum thing, but like you can tell he's a puppy, so he's working on that stuff. So I think part of it is definitely insecurity and fear, but I do, like part of it might just be he's a brat. I don't know. So I guess I don't want to start correcting him and make the problem worse. I got the Herm Springer collar. I actually think I got the wrong size, so I wanted to talk to you about that too.
Sure.
But I got the collar. I'm just afraid to use it on our walks because I don't know, like, I don't know where his reaction's coming from, so I don't want to make the problem worse.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. It's very common for these things to happen. I think, you know, just touching base on what you were saying about, you know, going back to what you were saying about the other food-based training, like you said, like, it is a very temporary thing.
Yeah.
And not only is it temporary on the leash, but mentally. So, like, his stimulation or his reactivity or what's making him react is still there, obviously. So that's a that's a Band-Aid you got to be careful about.
Yeah.
And like you said, that's the big problem with doing purely. It's not. There's no such. First of all, there's no such thing as purely positive, but. That's the only hard thing with doing positive only training when you're trying to do behavior modification with food on a redirect, especially at 4.5 months old. You get a 4.5 month old dog that's reacting. That's crazy to not just go in there and settle it because so for me, I just want to touch on that just so you know how crucial it is and how dangerous that could have been if you didn't like say, okay, this doesn't work, so switching gears, because at 4.5 months old, if you were to start to redirect the dog, you know, with food and whatever, it would have set him up for continual, like, reaction in the future once you don't have food. So it almost would have charged that up. And I'm saying this because he would have got frustrated he's not getting paid, and then he would still be reacting. So anyway, I just wanted to touch on that.
I could tell really quickly that was not going to be a long-term solution. And I was like, what am I going to do if I'm out for a walk and I don't have a treat?
Well, like, why would you have to, for me, it's like this too. And this is lifestyle for me. It's the reality is why would you have to spend, excuse me, why would you have to spend like, you know, X amount of time in the morning or in the afternoon or at night cutting up hot dogs? And then, I mean, you shouldn't have to put like your dog training equipment on your grocery list.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then for you to go out and just like hot dog. And I just, and the only, like, obviously I'm not a big fan of individuals who think there's only one way to train a dog because that is so limiting. And it's so, in my opinion, because I've seen it in so many different areas of not only dog training, but a lot of other things, you know, because I was an animal control officer and I saw a lot of dogs, you know, I would be talking to owners that were working on recall and the dog get hit by a car and they're like, well, you know, he usually likes his food, you know, so I've seen it in so many, it's not just my opinion. I've seen it like kill dogs over and over and over again. And the problem is you're gonna continue to have all of these internal issues, and you shouldn't have to go out there and say, okay, we see a dog, let's fill him full of hot dogs until we walk by. Like you said, it's a quick, easy, cheap, very bribey, tricky, sleazy way to get over it, in my opinion. But anyway, so I just wanted to be clear on that I'm not like. It's just not a good, and the great thing is a lot of people who go through that route, they realize really quickly, they're like, this is garbage. So let's move forward from that. Now, when you're dealing with certain situations, I tend to tell people, like, for your example, I can picture what you're dealing with in my head. You're dealing with a dog that is, well, first of all, you have a really tough mix. Siberian Huskies are one of, they're one of the hardest breeds to train, like, hands down. You know, kind of some of the breeds are Shiba Inus, Siberian Huskies, Great Danes. And the reason that is because they're just genetically make up to not do like obese. They're not real good. I don't want to say they're not good companion dogs, but they're not good. They just want to do their own thing. And so if you're not living in an environment like you said in your email, you live in Boston. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So You know, you're living in an environment where you do have to say, like, no, you have to walk nicely and you can't bark at people and whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, my point is, first off, there's breed. Breed goes into this a lot. You get a 4-month-old dog, and this particular breed and this particular dog is, you know, in my opinion, one of the tougher breeds to train because they're very dramatic. They're very local.
Very dramatic.
Yeah, very dramatic, very vocal, and they just don't compromise with obedience. You know, you get like a shepherd or a lab or a pit bull or really any other dog. Well, you come out and you say, hey, let's do this. They go, yes, sweet, let's do it together, you know? And
yeah.
It just seems like some of the breeds, including the huskies, are like, they're like cats. They're like, did I ask you for your opinion? Like, I'm not doing that, you know? And then when you try to like teach them stuff, they get like overly dramatic, and then it makes you feel like,
oh yeah,
yeah. So anyway,
I know when he's done with training because he's like not having it anymore. So
it's like a teenager.
I definitely see. Yeah. Oh, for sure,
100% every time. And it's very and the reason why I say that is because it's this I have this conversation with husky owners every time I talk to a husky owner. It's the same thing. It's so consistent. It's unbelievable. Yep. It's kind of a good thing, to be honest, as far as like genetics go, but. You know, it is. I just wanted to mention it is a bit challenging because of the breed. Yeah. So keep that in mind.
All right.
The age is another thing too. You know, like you said, he was potentially in a foster or something or whatever. So he didn't have a lot of structure, more than likely.
Well, they found him on the side of the road, as a puppy, as like a 2.5-month-old puppy, right? So. Who knows? He had no structure before that. And
exactly.
Who knows what his experiences were with other dogs or whatever.
Exactly.
Prior to
So I would say just making sure that when you're moving forward, I want you to just understand that there's a couple things going forward. This isn't going to be like, how do I, I shouldn't say that. It is going to be, how do I correct it? But it's also going to be, how do I teach it? How do I reward it? How do I sustain it? All that stuff is important. It's not just – because, again, it's the same thing of, like, hot dog lady. I should just make up hot dog lady, like, a character in all of the content because it's always prevalent. Like, it's always there. But hot dog lady, like, it's the same thing. As I don't want to be on the other end of the spectrum of just punishment either. We have to have both, and that's what's balanced. And that's and in my opinion, yeah. That's, like, the best form of being a good leader is like, it's operant conditioning. So really good job when you do good and, you know, enforcing that, like, yep, that's great. You're doing awesome. Keep that up. And then as soon as they make a really bad mistake in dogs, you know, ultimately it could cost them their life if they're like, meh, you know, and that's important to me.
Right.
Like, I don't want dogs to be blowing me off. A lot of people don't realize that when I'm asking a dog to sit and they're like, nah, I don't really want to. I'm like, no, you have to make them do that stuff because in the future, if you're like, hey, Fido, come, and they're like, yeah, remember when I blew you off for sitting and you didn't think it was a big deal? Well, I'm going to do it for this too. And then, boom, you know, something happens. So there's the obedience, but then there's also the reward. So just making sure that we're a little bit of both. Just like, hey, bad job. We're not doing that again, and here's why. And if you do it, you're going to get punished. And they go, oh, okay, that's a drag, but I get it. You know, so just making sure we have that balance.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Say like we're out for a walk, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna load him up on hot dogs. Right now, I have a little flat chain collar that I use on him. I know they're probably not the best. It's my the trainer at puppy kindergarten recommended it, so I just got one. And it's helped like kind of steer him away from other dogs as we're passing by them, but like. What should that scenario look like, right? Like, what should I do?
Well, again, like, you know, we're gonna dive into that, but the most important thing again is like, if a dog does something that they shouldn't do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to if you're gonna correct them, and this is applicable for what you're dealing with. The only time that I'm about to explain something is not applicable is when we're doing like behavior modification. When you get a dog that is like trying to hurt another dog, hurt another person, go after him. Like there's no, okay, well, we're not going to teach you what to do. We're going to just teach you to not do that first. And then we're going to teach you what not to do. And so when you're dealing with obedience and stuff that isn't like, you know, like dangerous like that, we're going to be doing, okay, you're pulling on the leash or you're semi-reactive in a way out of, you know, it's probably in this case, it's probably out of fear or like suspicion or just, I don't know what else to do with myself when I see other things, whatever. You have to, yes, we're going to correct it, but we're also going to teach them what we want them to do. So in your case, you already said you did the leave it. So yeah. That's where, so for an example, if you're standing there and then Bentley, right?
Bentley, yep.
If Bentley starts to react in any way that you don't like, mm-hmm. you would go, you do your verbal cue. So you'd say, leave it, right? And yeah. then if he didn't, you'd correct him with, what okay. we'll talk about corrections after, okay?
But okay.
You'd
okay.
correct him somehow. So if you have your collar on, you snap it and you go, hey, that's inappropriate. And okay. so you're tying the two together very closely.
Yeah.
And so he goes, well, hey, you know, I didn't really like that. And you go, well, that's ironic, you know, because I don't like you doing that. And so that's basically how that goes. And then he barks again and you do the same thing. You go, leave it, snap. And so he'll okay. start to associate that cue mm-hmm. with that snap. And he doesn't like the snap.
Right.
So he's like, so then when he barks again, you say, leave it. He goes, oh, I think something's coming. He stops. You go, could leave it. And at that moment, he'll capture what that means. Because he may not understand when you're correcting him why he's being punished. He knows he doesn't like it, but he may not understand exactly why he's doing it. But if you mm-hmm. stay consistent and you stay patient and you do exactly how I just kind of said it, you will be successful and he will understand. He'll capture that. He'll go, oh, and he'll match the two. So he's not really speaking English with you, of course. He's not understanding the English language. He's queuing up. That leave it command is then associated and followed up by that correction, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to be on the leash. Like, there's so many different ways you can do it. And then he stops because he's – and here's the other thing, too. There's a lot of marketing manipulation and complete bullcrap of people saying, like, fear-free dog training. For me, I know in the animal kingdom, because I've seen it firsthand every day when I worked with a lot of wolves. I worked with a lot of coyotes. I've worked with a lot of different canines and all over. And I know that a little bit of that, it's not that you definitely don't want your dog to fear you as a human. That's bad. That's wrong, right? There's a right. variation to that. That's terrible. You would never like want to walk in a room and a dog's afraid of you. But you do want that little bit of fear where the dog's like, oh, I don't want to get in trouble. Because that fear right. in that state of mind and in that application equals respect, where you're, you yes. know, same thing with mom and dad, you know, where you're like, hey, I want to go run across the parking lot at Disneyland because I'm excited. And you say, you get your butt back here. That tone of voice and the way that you said that has been enforced with some sort of punishment, which is why your brain switches and complies. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, I don't want to get in trouble. Your brain, and it doesn't matter if it's with animals or people, but it's kind of like a survival instinct to say, I've been punished for this before, therefore I'm not going to do this, you know, whatever it yep. may be, right? And so it's kind of like that defense mechanism. So anyway, the point is if you say, hey, leave it, and the dog goes, oh, like I'm associating that leave it with something bad, which would be a punishment in the very early stages, mm-hmm. then he would stop. And then as soon as he stopped barking, then you go, yeah, good, leave it. And he goes, okay. And so he'll associate. What happens is he'll capture that barking is what gets him punished.
Okay.
But more importantly, that we're not trying to tell the dog never to bark again because that's silly. Mm. What we're going to do is we're going to correct the dog, like if it's habitual. So in the house, on the walk, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's how that works. Now, you can take that okay. same template and apply it anywhere. So jumping, pulling on the leash, whatever. You just switch your verbal cues. But when you're teaching him how to heal, you want to teach him how to heal in a very, just like anything else in obedience, you want to teach stuff in a very non-distracted, neutral environment.
Yeah.
So.
Got it. His heal is actually pretty good. Obviously in a I mean, you're going to hate that I say this. You're going to be like typical dog owner, but like, obviously when the more distractions, the more it kind of falls apart in time, and
sure,
the more dogs there are, the less he pays attention to me. But like, I think his basics are there. They definitely need to be fine tuned. And there's definitely work that he can do there. And I think it has helped, but there is like also a point of no return with him, where like once his attention gets on that dog, and and they get too close, it's like, I could correct. I'm just trying to imagine this as I'm like walking down the street, right, and going through the scenario. But like, let's say he gets too close to a dog and gets that like point of no return. I can correct him, but I feel like I've tried to. I've even like tried to pull him, and without like actually pulling him off of that, like taking him and pulling him away, there, I don't even know if like a quick jolt of the leash would work.
Yeah.
And maybe that falls into the whole like what kind of collar I should be using and all that category. But even I'm just trying to think of like if he's in the yard with the neighbor's dog and they start going at each other, and I try to, he's not on a leash at that point.
Right.
And I try to pull him away. Because he's got a little handle on the back of his harness that he wears.
Mm-hmm.
He'd grab my hand. Like he'd probably snap at me. So what do I do in that case? Right. Cause I leave, it won't work. He's not going to listen to me.
Yeah.
I'll still grab him. He won't bite me hard, cause he does have some bite inhibition, I think, but it's like, what's the best thing to do in that scenario?
Well, like I said, you have to, this isn't like dog training in general, in any application, isn't like I'm going to give you a guidebook and you're going to go. I mean, everything's very, you know, you got to just work with it. But anyway, the point is
situational.
Yeah. You have to, like I said, you have to teach him exactly what you want him to do and what not to do. Yeah. And so, you know, with pulling on the leash or with, barking or whatever, you have to teach him like your relationship. So it's hard to explain, but the foundation of your relationship is what needs to change. The in-between will overall help you change that. So it's kind of like a win-win. So your baseline relationship with the dog is what needs to change. That's what needs to change. So he doesn't respect you. He doesn't understand that he's going to be punished if he does something he shouldn't be doing. And you don't know how to do that yet, which is normal. But like, that's what's causing a lot of this stuff to happen is mm-hmm. you're not able to get in there and really work with him and figure each other out, because you're trying to work on singular problems and you're not working on it. You're working very micro. You need to work bigger macro.
Okay. That's
so
fair.
You need to overall. So again, the big picture is going to be accomplished by doing 10 small little things.
Yeah.
So you need to get better at obedience, but overall you need to build a better relationship with your dog, which isn't easy. It's not given. It's something you have to work at. But that's like the big picture here of what you're dealing with.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, that's fair. We definitely have a lot of work to do.
So you just, so here's the thing. Okay. So I'm going to give you some examples of the little small stuff in order to build the big stuff to get better. Okay. So some obedience in general is going to help with that. So you're going to start teaching him how to heal. Okay. You're going to start teaching him thresholds. I'm going to go over this in a little bit, but heel, thresholds, sit, and break probably are going to be some good things to start with. So here's the thing. Ready? I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to give you a micro macro example right now. Okay.
Okay.
So you're going to say, Bentley, sit. And this goes for like anybody's dog. This is very applicable for most people that come in.
Okay.
So, hey, I have problems with my dog barking at other people, whatever. So, okay.
Yeah.
How's your obedience? Oh, it's great. Okay. Fido sit. The dog sits. Literally, owner looks at me. As soon as the owner takes the eyes off the dog and then looks at me, the dog gets up and kind of just circles around. And the owner's just staring at me like, see? And I'm like, oh, okay. So you think that sit is actually just like put your butt in the ground and then you get up. And so again, micro, macro. The micro is when we tell a dog to do anything, I'm just using the sit as an example. We say, we say Fido, sit. The dog puts their butt down. You say, good, sit. So you reward them verbally. They don't need food. They don't need an Academy Award show. You just say, hey, good, sit. Right? And then after that, they have to then stay in that position until you then break them. Now, for dogs who are newer to any behavior, and in this case, sit, of course, they're going to get up because they don't understand the process, right? So you have to teach them, no, buddy, you have to actually do this behavior until I then put you into a different gear. And they're going to go, yeah, but I don't, nope. You know, and again, it's all like that. It's all conversational. And that's what I see out of dogs. I'm reading that conversation just the way that like we talk as humans.
Yeah.
So they get up, they go, I don't want to. And they might spin around and they may look at you and go, no, right? And you go, nope. So you just grab the leash, put him back into a sit. And then you basically, until he sits for, you know, the duration of 5 seconds versus one, you say, okay, break. And then you give him a break.
Okay. Got it. I mean, we've been working on like sit, stay. So he'll go to his place and stay. He's getting there with it. Again, I think it's all stuff that we just need to continue to work at. I've had him for less than 2 months at this point. So we've been working on a lot, but he still has a long way to go.
Sorry. I was just going to say, you just have to remember that whenever you are doing anything with him, you don't want it to be on his terms.
Yeah.
It's like an open book test. Are they really learning? You know, where you're like, hey, here's your test. And they're just looking for answers.
Right? Yeah.
So in your case, he's just looking for the food. He takes the food and he's like, I'm done. And he walks away. And you go, no, you're not. He goes, yeah, I am. And then he walks away. So you just have to make sure that you have that balance of anything. That's the micro macro. And the micro obedience that I'm talking about and the consistency is going to help with the bigger picture of what you're dealing with.
Okay. Makes sense.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Like there's times when he knows I have a treat in my hand and he'll just start doing things because he thinks it'll get him the treat. Like I'll say one thing and he'll lay down. I'll say like paw and he'll lay down because he thinks that's what's gonna get him his treat. So he's definitely like become, I feel like I've taken it a bit too far in like the reward direction.
Yeah.
With the treats. So I think maybe working towards like getting him weaned off the treats and just good obedience and like a good boy or good job or good sit or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and again, like if you create a relationship where the dog is constantly overly stimulated by food, they have especially a 4.5-month-old puppy. I mean, you have a hard time actually capturing things.
Yeah.
It's like getting a bunch of, you know, kids together and say like, you know, trying to teach them something with like, you know, but also handing them out like, you know, little game consoles or something. They're like, yeah, okay. You know, you're not really capturing anything. So you want to create a more organic relationship with him, and you don't have to use a lot of the things that you've been doing, I'm sure. But I said like the other, you know, like when I talked about obedience, so the other thing is thresholds. So making sure that when you're doing thresholds, again, it's micro macro. You're going to say, you're going to go out the door. So you're going to walk out the door. You're going to say, Bentley, sit. He's going to go, oh, not this again. And you're going to say, yeah. And he sits. You're going to grab the door and he's going to get up. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to say, nope, put him back into a sit. And then that's going to take you probably with that dog. Again, you have to work on the sit and the first step that we talked about, but that might take you 10 to 15 minutes just to even grab the door without him getting up because he's so conditioned. Because the problem is he's so conditioned to act on his terms and act on an impulse. Yeah. And so if he's, and you got to think of like what state of mind he's in. He's never checking in with you. He's never engaging with you unless you have a pack full of hot dogs, which again, you could give to a robot and he's going to be all over that robot and you're chopped liver. So it's not you. You're just a delivery person.
Yeah.
So you just have to realize that you want him to actually be responsive and engaged and respectful and understanding of what you're providing. So again, we worked on the sit. Now what we're doing is we're going to go back over to the sit when we're working on, the door opening thing. So we say sit, we open the door. And then once you can get past grabbing the door and him not getting up, you grab the door. Once he completely accomplishes it and he doesn't get up, you go, yay, good sit or whatever. And you go break, and you just break the dog. So you're incrementally building his relationship through thresholds, micro. Mm-hmm. Macro is he's engaged in you. You're gatekeeping the things and you're holding his resources because the resources that he wants are that portal of a door. That's what doors are to dogs. They're portals like a video game. They walk into it and they're in a whole different world. So they're excited about that. So holding those resources and making him work through you is nice. And again, bottom line is he's sitting politely before you release him through the door.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same exact time, you're building that respectful, can I do this? Or, you know, kind of like, may I please be excused from the dinner table type thing. Doesn't really make sense, but it's a respect thing. It's like, don't just get up and walk away. Like, who do you think you are type thing?
Right.
So anyway, that's the other exercise you can start doing. And then over time, obviously, incrementally, the goal would be opening the door, you walking out the door. And then he'll look at you. He'll look directly at your face. You know, he'll sit there and stare at you and be like, can I go? Can I go? And you go, break. And he breaks through.
Okay.
And then it's the same application with the heel. So you're going to teach him what heel is. And heel, for, you know, how we teach it anyway, in association, in conjunction with all of my YouTube videos, the heel for us is simply just asking the dog to loose leash walk on our left side until we then ask them to do something else.
Okay, got it.
So it's much like a manual transmission in that case where you're not going to shift into gears automatically. You're just going to say, this is what I want you to do. This is what I want you to do next. You know, so you're shifting gears manually. And it's not going to pop out into neutral until you allow it.
Yeah. I think we need more follow through with like all that stuff, because you're right, he'll get back up right away.
And I can tell you right now, like, if you can't get your dog to sit for more than 5 seconds, you're not gonna be able to stop him from doing the things he wants to do. If you can't even get your dog to sit for 5 seconds, think about the other things that you're asking him to do. Well, I want you to stop pulling. Yeah, right. I want you to stop barking. Never going to happen. You can't even get him to sit for 5 seconds. Why? You know what I mean? So that's like a really big, I don't want to say it's a secret, but it's so overlooked. People are like getting very complex into like, why is my dog biting me? Or why does my dog like, you know, bark at every single thing? I'm like, well, first of all, you can't even get your dog to sit for 5 minutes or 5 seconds. So why would we even start on this other stuff?
Right.
You know, that's a problem. So it's not even a question of, you know, like, oh, I think that's probably like some of it. No, that's probably a lot of it. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. Wow. This just makes me feel like I feel like we've come so far and there's still so much we need to work on.
Well, yeah, but I also think you're probably just putting your eggs in the wrong baskets to gain progression. That's probably what's happening is you're not focusing on the right, you know, it's just like anything else. Like if I wanted to like run a marathon, but I was out like weightlifting every single day and not doing cardio or you know, whatever, then I'm talking to my coach. I'm like, man, you know, I feel so defeated. My coach is like, yeah, but first of all, you can't be defeated if you're not working on the right stuff to progress in the field you want to. So don't feel like you haven't done anything or you have so much to do. I would just, you know, go a clean slate and start over kind of, and just realize that the work you have been doing hasn't been derivated towards the right direction in order to reach your goals, which is why you're on the phone with me right now and why you're, you know, exactly. probably frustrated with this stuff is you're just not working on the right stuff. And I think keep it super basic. I mean, dogs are super easy animals once you just stop everything and go, okay, what's going on? Why is this happening? And I think, again, it's not a, dogs aren't like a programmable, hey, my dog pulls, how do I fix it? Hey, my dog wants to bite people, how do I fix it? It's like, you can. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of stuff to, like, you know, modify it, to manage it, but, you know, there's so much into it. So it's not one of those quick and easy fixes. There's a lot of stuff. It's not like, hey, how do I lose 50 pounds or 100 pounds or 2 pounds or what? How do I run 16 miles? How do I run 100 miles? It's like, well, it's not as easy as just, well, stop eating or just start running. It's like, there's so much more. And I think that dog owners just in general don't realize that the very basic stuff, like every single person, I shouldn't say that. I would say the majority of people who have behavioral problems that I work with can't get their dog to sit for 5 seconds. And that's where I start. It's like, oh, your dog's doing something externally that you want to modify, or you want to modify this behavior. Let's see where your basics are at. Let me see your communication at like the easiest level possible. And they say, sit, the dog, boop, pops up. No, sit, boop, pops up. I'm like, okay, again, remember the same thing I talked about before. I'm like, okay, you want your dog to start barking at people, but you can't get him to sit. So anyway, what other stuff have you done obedience-wise? Have you started the heel at all?
Yeah, we've been doing heel, and he's pretty good at it. He'll heel. He doesn't fully understand the break, so he'll heel, and like you said, temporarily, he'll heel for a little bit, and I've been trying to work on holding him so he understands when I say break, he can go off and, like, sniff and, you know, be a dog and do dog things. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely, like, we've been working out on that over the past few weeks. He's good on the leash. He'll walk by my side, but I will say, like, I dropped the leash once when we were on a hike, and he looked back and took off so fast. Like, he had a bad life, man. Like, this dog took off like he was never back.
So. Yeah. It's funny. I always tell people, happy dogs don't run away.
Yeah. Well, this dog's apparently not happy.
Well, and it's...
He bolted.
Yeah, it's... And what it is too is it's more about it's more about, again, like, understanding, okay, my dog won't come back. Again, you're looking at it as my dog won't come back, what a jerk. I would look at it as like, how's your recall, how many times have you practiced this? You know, it's like that's the template for everything.
Yeah. His recall's not there. I will fully admit that. Like, we haven't gotten much to that point outside of practicing in the yard. And it's honestly, like, it's a part of our environment, right? Like, it's hard in the city to find somewhere to go where there's no other dogs. Even like a dog park, right? We'll go like at 6 a.m. just because that's the only time there's no other dogs in there, and try to practice some stuff in there. So it's a partially, you know, not trying to come up with excuses, but that is a product of our environment too, just finding the space to practice recall outside of, like, being in the yard and with distractions too. So his recall's not there. I know it's something we need to work on, and I know it's probably one of the most important things we need to work on.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like, look at that, but I can't stress enough how big that is, what we were just saying. So again, like, you know, using that example, Tom, my dog got off leash once and ran away. It's like, okay, that's what dogs do if they don't know what else to do, you know, like, so those are the things that we're talking about. Okay. So I want to go through the reactivity, right, is the big thing, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's dive into that. So when you're on the leash, again, like, I really want you to continue to work on your heel. So making sure you can get him to, the big thing. So if you were well, you are in front of me, but if you were physically in front of me with your dog, I would be asking you to show me your heel, and I would want you to proof it, which would mean you're going to walk forward. So you're going to say Bentley heel, you're going to walk forward, and then you're going to turn directions on a 90-degree angle, which is called a tune-up, which you've probably seen me do in a lot of my YouTube videos.
Yes.
You 90-degree yes. turn, you go the other way, and then you ask the dog to then heel again. And if the dog doesn't heel and just you go that way and then the dog goes that way, that's where that's where I would start. I'd say, okay, so it's the same thing as it's – so that's the same equivalent to Fido sit. The dog sits for 2 seconds and then gets up. Because if you ask a dog to heel and they're already on your left side next to you and they're already moving forward with you, the real turn of the page and the real proof to say, okay, do you know this command or do you not, is when you turn 90 degrees and you say Bentley heel and you go that way and he goes, oh, yep, and I'm going to follow you, and then he follows with you. So if you if you don't, and you can practice that and you can think in your head, okay, he might, he may, I think he will, I don't think he will, whatever, it doesn't matter. But that's what you have to practice, is to make sure that he's engaged with you. Excuse me. We never want to supply pressure to the dog that is unnecessary, of course. So our goal as you know, trainers, is to make sure that we are teaching the dog stuff. So there's no reason why we should get a dog out and put him on any type of collar and just start like saying, do this, do this, do this. And they're like, what the heck? You know? So you have to make sure that when you're turning and you say Bentley heel, the dog actually turns and complies with you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not getting that, then you say, okay, then we need to tune this up. And if you can't do that in a non-distracted area, you're likely going to fail if you have all these other things going on. So you have to really audit where you're at in your relationship and your engagement with your dog before you actually go to like showtime and really work on these things in a environment that is unlikely going to be successful for a dog who really doesn't know these things that well, especially at 4.5 months.
You know,
still a puppy. But you can still do the basic obedience. You may just not be able to do it for long periods of time when you're, you know, out working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He'll go like 10, 15 minutes at a time. And then we got to take a break because he gets frustrated too. And he's obviously vocal because he's a husky. So he'll let me know exactly when he's over it.
Yeah. So that's what you should be working on as far as the healing.
Okay.
And so the healing will counter some of the exterior behavioral problems you're having. For an example, if you teach him how to heel really nicely and he turns on a dime with you and you're doing really good and he perks up, sees a person coming, sees a dog coming, whatever is going to make him react that day, and you say, Bentley, heel, and you turn and you go the other way, two things. Again, I talk about this a lot, but it's big. It's micro macro of the process. Is when you turn and you go the other way, you say heel, and you have a really good opportunity at him actually doing it because you've been practicing it for days, weeks, months, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is now you have way more leverage to punish him for reaction because you're asking him to do something you've practiced prior. So so he sees something, you've been practicing your directional change heel, he's been doing great, and you turn and you go the other way, and he goes and barks at that person, you can actually start punishing him for something more direct that you guys have been practicing and conditioning and being, you know, understanding that process. Because what happens is a lot of times dogs react, and you just sit there and you're like, stop, don't. And I've seen some crazy stuff. I never will say I've seen it all, but I've seen some crazy stuff where people will cover the dog's eyes. I've seen that. That's a good one. And when I see that, I'm like, oh, this is good. I just watched that stuff. But I've seen people cover dog's eyes, you know, before, and I'm like, oh, boy. That's probably Hot Dog Lady will do if she gets a serious problem. But does that make sense? So your leverage changes because now he knows why he's getting correct. He's like, hey, yes. I don't like this. Hey, and you're like, well, heal. And he's like, oh, fine. You know, I've worked on that. I know it. Where if you're correcting him in any fashion, it doesn't matter if it's verbal leave it, no, you know, or if it's covering their eyes, they still don't like it. It's still aversive to them. They don't want you to do it, right? It's uncomfortable or whatever. But now at least you have leverage so they know how to shut it off. So you've given the power back to the dog to escape the pressure of the equipment that you're going to be using, which would be the prong collar, I'm assuming, at some point. So that's what you have to do. And then the other thing is leave it. So again, same exact template. And this is like a template I've been preaching and preaching and preaching for many years, is privately you're going to work on leave it. So you're going to use his favorite ball, his toys, his treats, his food, anything. Peanut. I did one yesterday with peanut butter. I smushed peanut butter in the bottom of a dish, because the peanut butter is nice because they have to work at getting it all. So you can use it for, you know, a while. So anyway, so you work on leave it, and leave it for the way that we teach it is, and that's the thing about dog training. It could be, everyone has their own flavor, but the way that you're hiring me to help you and the way that I'm going to explain it to you is how we're doing it, right? So when you say leave it, it's really just disengaging command. So when you say leave it, whatever they're doing, it doesn't matter if they're barking, chasing a cat, eating, chewing on something. When you say leave it, you want them to disengage off of what they're actively doing.
Okay.
So the way to start that is just with using things the dog really likes.
Yeah. No, that makes
already,
sense.
Which you've already established.
Yeah. And his leave it is actually really, really good. I'll say leave it from like across the yard, and he'll leave whatever he's doing.
Perfect.
That was one of the first things I taught him, because I find that it was the most useful. He's gotten pretty sharp at that. Again, though, with dogs, like, that's the one thing that I'll say leave it, and it still doesn't stick. So I'd say, like, in a lot of situations, he'll listen with leave it, but if we were passing a dog and I was just like, Bentley, leave it, he wouldn't, he'd still
at least half
the time.
So now then if you were to say, okay, Tom, the template's set up, he knows the disengaging, or he knows the, like I call it, it is a form of counter conditioning. So you're countering and using conditioning that you've already practiced to disengage the dog off the thing you don't like. And then the next thing is just making sure you're able to reinforce it, or enforce it. So when you turn or when you say leave it, and he's like, yeah, I know what that is, but I'm not doing it. That's where you need to enforce it. So if he reacts that way, you say leave it, and then you got to correct him, because that's another big thing. It's very common. It happens all the time. Dogs will say no. I'm not doing it. Same thing with sit. Same thing with leave it. Same thing with heel. They're like, no. And then that's where the tools that we have available for us, especially here in the United States, which is nice, we're able to then give them some sort of correction for non-compliance, which would make your life a lot easier. Because basically, if you don't have that ability, then you're just assuming and hoping and praying and wishing your dog just listens to you. Yay! Wouldn't that be nice? But they have different agendas because they're freaking animals. You know what I mean? So that's why tools are so huge and so prevalent. And again, tools are utilized by everybody, including myself, who's a professional, to get certain things out of certain dogs. But tools for dog owners who aren't professionals and have a day job and don't have that innate instincts to just do things, it makes your life a lot easier. Like, you're not a professional. You do need help. You do need tools. You do need some sort of backup, you know? So that's where that comes in. So that's a different template. Okay, Bentley knows exactly what I want him to do, and he's still not listening. That's where your enforcement comes in. Just like anything else, you know, kids, go to your room because you just threw a stapler through the wall. They say, screw you, mom. Screw you, dad. I'm not doing it. And you don't have anything to enforce that.
Yeah.
Right. Micro. At that moment, you can't punish him for throwing the stapler through the wall. But then guess what he's going to do every single time you ask him to do something he doesn't want to do in the future? Make me. Because last time you didn't do anything about it. So this time I'm not going to do anything. So yeah. For me, it's very common sense behavior to understand. Well, yeah, that makes sense. Kids drawing Sharpie all over your brand new wall, and you just, you know, let's enter Hot Dog Lady and try to just say, hey, come over here. Here's a cupcake. And they come over and they gobble the cupcake, and then they start wiping their cupcake hands all over the wall with the Sharpie. You go, yep, look what you've created, an absolute monster.
Yeah.
And then in the future, when they grow up and they become an adult and they are a certain way because you have allowed them to do that because it was your job to protect them and to teach them wrong from right using operant conditioning, your fault, you know?
Right, 100%. Yeah, it's a distraction, essentially. So he's not learning the behavior.
Yeah,
he's
and
just distracted from what he was doing.
Yes, and that's what you were doing.
Can't leave it.
That's what you were doing before, and it's not a good idea, you know, for very obvious reasons.
Yeah. No, and I could tell early on that it wouldn't work long term.
Yeah, a lot of people. I had this girl yesterday I was talking to. She said that her trainer told her that if her dog tries to go after other people, to growl at the dog.
Oh God!
Exactly. I was like, "Are you?" She's like, "It was so uncomfortable." I'm like, "You think?" I'm like, "Not only is that like the most bizarre thing, but you paid somebody to tell you to growl at your dog, and it's not gonna work, like at all, and it's dangerous if a dog like if you get into it." So again, nothing surprises me anymore, and I haven't seen it all, but that was. I have heard that before, but man, it just keeps getting better and better with
Well, I think that's like the premise of if your dog bites you, you're supposed to like yelp. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's like a similar concept.
But it was
supposed to teach them, like as a dog would teach them.
Yeah, but
maybe. I don't know. I'm not defending it.
No. It's a good glasses half full type thing, but it wasn't used in like she was actually being told to growl at the dog to correct the dog. Like if the dog growls at people, you growl at them to like punish them. It wasn't like the premise of,
right.
Hey, you hurt me or whatever. It was right. Like, I want you to become an actual animal and vocalize to them and scare them with your voice, with like growling. Unbelievable. Anyway, we are slowly but surely running out of time. I'm going to give you like a, do you have any questions, first of all?
Yeah, I wanted to touch on a few more things. And I'll also say this. I actually signed him up for your board and train. He's coming in September.
Cool.
So, I mean, the point of this was really to get us through the next couple of months and work on what we can from a basic obedience perspective. And I think a lot of the stuff we talked about was really helpful. Because we can get stronger. Like there's a lot, like you said, there's a lot we can do with our relationship and with making sure that he truly knows commands and isn't just sitting for a hot second and then moving on with his life. So I think this was really helpful. The other thing I did want to touch on is he gets really, I mean, he's a puppy, I get it, but he gets really mouthy when he's excited, when he wants something, like he nips, and as his adult teeth are coming in, it's a little scary for me because I, you know, my nephews are running around and they're still afraid of him. So obviously like they're already jittery. And if I'm not sure, like he's not going to bite them out of aggression, but if he's going to nip them, like that's only going to create a bigger problem. So for now, you know, I usually like put him on the lead in the backyard if they're around, or I'll put him, you know, in a separate room or whatever. But I guess I wanted to ask you what, you know, if you had any advice as far as managing that and I guess getting him to stop nipping or being so mouthy when out of I think it's out of excitement.
Yeah. So again, it's like, it's the same, I'll use the same template. And I think that like you could probably, you know, by as many times as I've like put this into your head, you could probably like answer this question in my words already because I've said it so many times. But like, again, like if he's doing okay, so we have a dog, right? And they're our dog, right? And they're doing a bunch of stuff. Yeah, you can holler and scare them and they'll run away and they'll know that they've done something bad with voice inflection. But how are you going to handle that situation? Like, what training have you done? Just like with any, I sound like a broken record, but like literally with any type of job or any type of environment that you're in, what type of training, like if the fire alarm goes off right now, like we as humans are going to be like, okay, let's figure this out, right? Like, let's figure out what's smoking. Let's figure out how to get out of here if I need to. Like, let's stop, you know, whatever. It's training in life. So it's the same thing with dogs. Like, if he's doing all of that stuff, you have to, what have you taught him to counter that? So he's chasing, he's getting excited with kids. He's jumping up. We'll teach him off prior, right? The kids are running around and he's policing and he's chasing them and he's nipping at their heels because he's a dog and that's kind of what they do.
Yeah.
You teach recall, right? You can't take singular little things that are, I guess just discouraging or kind of a drag for you in your life and just say like, how do I fix that? How do I go in and like, he's chasing kids because they're little and he doesn't see them often and they're screaming and yelling and they have stuffed toys in their hand and he's chasing them and trying to nip at them. Well, that makes a little bit of sense very instinctually for a dog to do something like that, especially a puppy. You can't just say, how do I get that out of there? It's like, yeah, I love everything. How do I remove that one thing I don't like? Well, just, you know, wave your Harry Potter wand and just poof it out, you know, if only. So you really have to. And that's why I'm trying to like put that template into you is you have to ask yourself a question. The things that you don't like that your dog is doing, what do they know differently? How have you, okay, this is the problem. How do I find a solution? Right? Kid starts throwing a tantrum. You're not just going to say like, you're not going to call somebody and say, how do I fix this? You go, what relationship do you have with this child to overcome this? Hey, if you know, it's okay, you know, whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like you can't just like say, okay, I don't want this 4-year-old to have tantrums anymore. This isn't okay with me. This doesn't fly with me. Like I have other stuff to do. I don't like, I want to remove this tantrum.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's what, you know, same thing with dogs. That's what they do, especially at 4.5 months old. So, you know, you can fill in the blanks with these little things that you're working on as far as chasing the kids or not coming back or nipping the kids or whatever, put them on. But again, I think the real advice for you would be making sure that you're working on the corrections too. So he jumps on a kid, you say off, and he's like, yeah, I don't care about that. The kid has cotton candy. That's more important to me. Right. So then you correct him. You say no, off, pop, and you pop him and he goes, oh. You go, well, you know, just like with kids. Like go to timeout or something. You're like, I don't want to. You're like, go. You know, it's the same thing. Dog, you know, you can't be emotional about it. You just said, okay, this is a problem. How do I correct it?
Got it. Yeah, no, that's good advice. That's a good point. It all comes back to that. I think that was good perspective too, that it all comes back to like how strong his obedience is. But I know we're running out of time. The last thing I'll say is, so I got the Hermspringer collar. Is there a time when, like, is he too young to use it? What, like?
That's the million-dollar question. So prong collars are again, an enforcement or sometimes a reinforcement over things that we want to do. So, you know, it's the same thing with, like, the e-collar or the remote collar. It's really just enforcing things for us. So, yes, we can. And again, like I talked about in the beginning of our conversation, is the only time I'm really going to use a tool as an aversive immediately out of the gate without teaching them prior things is if we're doing like behavior modification and the dog is, you know, like in my videos, if you've seen an aggressive German Shepherd coming in and trying to like go crazy at me, I'll correct them immediately for that because you have to. You have to be very assertive. And then I work on, you know, then I care about the dog's, you know, then I'm very empathetic about the dog's emotion and how we're going to get over this and all that stuff. But immediately, if I have a dog that's actively trying to hurt something or someone, that's where punishment comes in. But with a 4-month-old puppy, you don't, again, same thing, like we don't want to cheat like the hot dog lady and just like bang, bang, bang and like stop doing all this. we also have to teach some sort of directional leash communication with the dog, with the prong collar in association. So it's definitely like the safest tool to use as far as applying pressure to a dog's body, because it's very distributed instead of just like, you know, a slip or a flat collar or something. However, they have to know a little bit of the background noise of what you're asking them to do, right?
Yeah.
So if you ask a dog, so let's take the sit for an example, because it's easy to understand.
Yeah.
You're going to say, Bentley, you may even say, Bentley, sit. And then they look at you and they go, nope. And then you basically will give them a little bit of pressure on the prong to correct them, right?
Okay.
And then they put their butt down. You go, good, sit. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
The other thing that you can start to do is you can start to load. It gets kind of complex, but you can start to load the dog with pressure too. So you can actually, the dog's sitting next to you, and you can actually like put a little pressure on the, like not correct the dog, not pull the dog up. You just put a little pressure up, just a slight bit pressure up, and then you cue the dog to sit, right? And
okay.
Then the dog puts their butt ground down. And so basically what happens is the as soon as you – so the dog learns to escape the pressure through compliance. So it's a classic escape training method.
Mm-hmm.
And and we're not trying to stress the dog out. I can't stress that enough, that we're not trying to stress the dog out.
Yeah.
We're just trying to teach the dog the conversation of how to turn the pressure off. So we're giving them the power to turn pressure off. And it's a really nice method to get things really clean and nice and fast. So you can apply a little pressure up, the dog goes, and then you go, and then like probably a second after you apply a little pressure, you go sit, the dog puts their butt down, boom, it shuts off. And so the dog understands how to shut pressure off, right? So next time you ask him to sit, you may just pull the leash up a little bit. The dog sits. Good sit. Same thing with down. And then the prong collar just helps enforce that a little bit. But ultimately, that's what you need to be doing with the prong collar. Is you don't want to like necessarily – you can go out and do the little corrections with the turn and the heel and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you just have to be careful. So I would say 4.5 months old in your case is going to be okay. But just so you know, you're going to get a lot of feedback from the dog. You're going to get a lot of vocalization. You're going to get a lot of bucking. You're going to get a lot of dramatic things. But you also have to make sure why don't you just show me your prong before we got to run, and I'll see if it fits.
So I think I may have ordered the wrong size. I measured his neck and it was like 17 inches. So I got...
Yeah, it's too big. So what you need is a 2.... So go on my website and get the 2.25. So the...
Okay.
And I'm working with Herm Springer on this, actually about... Because you get a... So that prong collar is like, you know, that's a big prong collar for a big dog.
Yeah,
so,
Diesel.
Yeah, so it's not what you want. So you're going to get a 2.25 and just order some extra links on my collar or on my page, as well as get the safety clip. And that's what you want to use, because that collar will literally probably just sink your dog to the ground because it's so heavy compared to the size of the dog. So just and again, it's not your fault. It's just it's kind of deceiving sometimes when you have like, oh, this is the neck size, and you can take you can add links to any prong. Like you don't have to. It's not like it's very customizable. So I would get the 2.25, the extra links and the safety clip, and start with that, and then just get going with it.
All right, beautiful. We're gonna work on it.
All right, good luck. It was nice to meet you, and we'll see you in September.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Tom.
Yep. Bye-bye. All right, you guys, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for listening. Again, another great podcast with another another dog owner that was struggling. And as you can tell in this episode, we made a lot of progression. And I'm really excited and grateful for the opportunity to not only help her, but also be able to record it and then hopefully help you guys out at home. What an awesome combination. Anyway, guys, it's Friday here in New York. Wherever you're listening to this, I hope you guys have a wonderful day, safe weekend, and I will talk to you next time. Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.